Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Transaction costs are now available at affordable rates through Solana or the so-called layer twos, because you see the transaction fees for Bitcoin and Ethereum, no one would ever use that database to build anything on, right? My analogy for non-crypto people is, would you want to fill your FAR at $50, week after week, and then 1 week at $600? And that's effectively what high gas fees are on Ethereum.
Hey everyone, good morning. It's Tuesday, April 9th, 2024, and you're listening to Markets Daily, a show where we get into the minds of some of the smartest, most experienced investors, traders, analysts, professors, CEOs who have something smart or hot to say about what's going on in the crypto markets. I am Jen Sanasi. Before we get into our discussion today, let's take a look at what's going on in crypto markets. According to CoinDesk indices at 8 a.m. Eastern time, things are looking relatively flat. Bitcoin was down about 2.5% at $70,711. Ether pretty flat this morning at $3,629. And the CoinDesk 20 index at around $2,650, down almost 2%. Let's get into our conversation this morning. For more on the markets, we are chatting to Venek CEO Jan Venek. Thanks so much for joining the show from Paris, I believe.
From a very busy Paris Blockchain Week conference, yes.
Oh my gosh. Well, we look at the markets this morning, like I said, relatively flat. You're sitting in Paris at Blockchain Week. What's the vibe like there? How are people feeling about the markets?
It's very busy. It's an interesting mix. We're the only ETF issuer, at least that I've been able to identify. So it's kind of interesting. A lot of the conferences I go to are full of banks and financial, TradFi financial services companies. So it's a little bit nice just to be amongst people really focused on crypto solutions.
That's really interesting. I mean, given all of the excitement around the ETFs, you would think that there would be more ETF issuers at a conference like the one that you're sitting at right now. Why do you think that you are the only one there?
Well, first of all, a lot of the US issuers don't have a presence in Europe. So we're lucky. We set up our ETF business in Europe several years ago. We're approaching $10 billion in assets. We're about the 15th largest. So, we have our own family of UCITS funds. And as well, they're really ahead of crypto regulation. So we launched our Bitcoin ETN over 3 years ago. We have 12 funds or ETNs that track one token or more than one token. So, we're well ahead of where we are in the United States. In fact, last week, our ETH ETN here in Europe announced that it was going to be offering staking rewards to investors. And, in the United States, we're not even approving an ETH ETF.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's been a years-long battle to get that Bitcoin ETF approved in the United States. I think there's been frustration from within the SEC. We've heard from Commissioner Hester Peirce about her frustration from institutions that were wanting to launch the product. Given that journey and given the sheer volume of inflows that we've seen in the ETF in the United States, did you expect that to happen? Like, tell me a little bit about what you're thinking, how you're feeling, how you're talking about the ETF at VanEck now.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely surprised by a couple of things. First of all, I mean, we've seen a Bitcoin ETF get approved before in the United States, right, with Bitcoin futures, and that was about $1 billion. We've seen it get approved in Canada. We've seen it get approved in Europe. We've seen it get approved in Brazil. And so it's never been kind of that quantity of money. I think one of the sources is definitely retail, pent-up retail demand, which has been a large part of our inflows. And I know that's true for other issuers as well. And then there were, I'll call them Bitcoin whales, or investors that had Bitcoin, maybe in Coinbase or in self-custody, and they decided to move it into the ETF. And that's frankly one thing that we didn't appreciate. We approached the market with very competitive fees, but we didn't waive the fees. And I think some of those people who are transferring assets wanted the fee waiver. That's never worked really in ETF history, but it did work this time for those issuers. So we missed out on some of those allocations, at least in the early days.
Are you surprised that the interest is coming from retail right now? Did you expect a bigger interest from institutional investors?
No, I mean, really, I guess if you think about it, all the market value that has been created within crypto, $2 trillion, $3 trillion, it's all really basically just held by individuals, right? They're so-called Bitcoin whales. It's people that got involved. I always date people in crypto from when they started buying. So I'm a 2017 person, but people that got involved in 2012 or 2013 are sitting on massive gains. So, and that's all individuals. It's very few institutions so far that we can see that are allocating.
What's it going to take to get that institutional interest, that institutional allocation in an ETF product in the United States, do you think?
I think it's two things. One is time. I mean, no broker dealers that we work with have really approved it for their financial advisors to recommend. They can take orders for the ETFs, but not to recommend the ETFs. That's number one. And number two is, I think the way that financial advice works in the United States is there are a lot of model allocators. So you're not, the individual advisor is not making the buy-sell decision. Rather, they're hiring expert allocator to make that decision. Some allocators, like a VanEck, like BlackRock, like WisdomTree, have started to get regulatory approval or approval in their fund prospectuses to allocate to Bitcoin. So I think actually that will be an interesting source of demand going forward, but that will take time.
Yeah, and where does it go from here? I feel like every month we're like, wow, record inflows. I know last month trading volume tripled to $111 billion. Do you expect to see that number increase in April and the month following and the month following? Or what does your trend indicator look like?
Inflows often follow prices, but I'm very bullish for Bitcoin. A year ago, came out on TV and said, I'm pounding the table on Bitcoin and gold. Said it was a buy for 2024. Our strategist, Matt Siegel, and I both predicted all-time buys this year, and it happened pretty quickly. I don't think the drivers are really only the Bitcoin ETF approval. So it's, the macro factors, which we know, the Fed lowering interest rates or stopping raising interest rates. And then also the Bitcoin internal dynamics of, the halving coming up. The one data point that might be interesting to you is that you can track these Bitcoin trades 24/7, how much of the appreciation happens during U.S. trading hours. And even since the start of the Bitcoin ETFs in the U.S., it's only been about a third of the appreciation has been during U.S. hours. So like even over the weekend, right, you saw big moves of Bitcoin coming out of Asia. So I think Bitcoin ETFs have been helpful, but I don't think they're the dominant narrative, I would say, this year, even though people are talking about it all the time.
You're not the first person to tell me that on this show. Marcus Thielen, founder of 10X Research, has said the same thing. So are you maybe saying that we're putting maybe a little bit too much focus on the Bitcoin ETF when we're looking at what could be driving price movement in the markets?
I think so. It's time to move on.
Well, it seems like in the news, we cannot move on from this ETF approval. It was a decade coming. So I think we're going to be talking about
No, listen, and I don't want to minimize it because, I mean, VanEck, our history is in gold. We started the first gold fund in the United States in 1968. And there are a lot of things about that history that are analogous to Bitcoin. But interestingly, we had to invest in gold mining shares because it was illegal to own gold bullion in the United States. We couldn't own or offer a gold bullion ETF. So it's non-trivial. I think an ETF basically makes it impossible to make Bitcoin illegal in the U.S. That's not non-trivial. I don't mean to minimize it. I just think there's a lot of things happening in the markets every day, and the impact of that will sort of wane over time.
Well, on the topic of ETFs, I do have to ask you about the Ether ETFs. I know you recently said that it's unlikely that we'll see an approval in May. I know VanEck has a deadline coming up in May that everyone is talking about. Have you engaged with regulators at all on that, or what's some of the thinking behind that's probably not going to happen?
The basic thing that happens is when the SEC is going to approve a prospectus, an S-1, is they start giving you comments on it. So the Bitcoin ETFs really started moving in my mind when they called us and said, oh, here are our comments. Well, we filed, as Cboe's filed for that team before approval, we filed our S-1 and we haven't heard anything. So that's that's kind of a sign. It won't happen without getting the disclosure documents in order. So we'll see. I think our 19 befores expired the same day as ARK and 21 shares, Kathy Wood. So that's in May.
A little different than the lead up to the approval of that spot Bitcoin ETF. There was some back and forth with regulators. They were looking for clarification in some of the filings, right?
Yeah, and they were giving us a lot of details about, could we take in-kind creations and, exactly how the creation redemption process would work, whether broker dealers could touch Bitcoin. I mean, kind of funny things. With ETH, you also have the tax issue around whether staking is possible at all, and then what the tax implications of that are, if they're available in the legal structure of an ETF, it's like a 33-act ETF.
I mean, on that note, I know that there's probably a little bit of a longer road ahead than you would like for the Ether ETF, but are you looking at any other crypto assets for an ETF in the near future?
Not in the U.S. And frankly, we're active investors with our institutional funds with different tokens. And frankly, I think both Bitcoin and ETH miss the most important story of 2023, which people know, but I don't think they focus on enough, which is simply that transaction costs are now available at affordable rates through Solana or the so-called layer twos. Because you see the transaction fees for Bitcoin and Ethereum, no one would ever use that database to build anything on, right? My analogy for non-crypto people is, would you want to fill your FAR at $50, week after week, and then 1 week at $600? And that's effectively what high gas fees are on Ethereum. I think just focusing on those two, and sorry, that's where we're at in the United States, so it's natural. But the most interesting thing happening in crypto to me right now is that you have databases that can scale, that can take a lot of users, that have high uptime, and now have predictable costs. And so real stuff can be built on these databases now. And I think we're going to see that in the next couple of years.
You said not in the US. Are you looking at launching other crypto related ETFs? Let's say maybe in Europe, where you're sitting now?
I think Europe, we've pretty much saturated what we want to do, which is giving investors access to the L1s and some of the bigger L2s and some of the Oracles. So I think we now are focusing on our actively managed partnerships and trying to, that just gives us so much more flexibility and there's so many opportunities in the market.
Okay, we do have to go, but I have to ask you about this. Because I love a family working together, and your son launched a stable coin recently, a US dollar backed stable coin called Agora. Did you have much involvement, or were you advising him when he was building this?
Oh, no, you know how it goes. He I think we discovered Bitcoin together, but I'll give him credit for discovering it first. And that's been his career. I do agree the stablecoin market is very interesting. You know, there's about 200 billion in stablecoins, but 10 trillion in annual transaction volume, and it's dominated by two players. And I agree that there's a lot more competition opportunities in the stablecoin space. And what we're going to be doing for Agora is what BlackRock does for Circle, which is manage the reserves. And you need, I think, a regulated entity and transparent accounting for a stablecoin, and we hope to provide that to Agora.
Well, you mentioned the competition there, and it seems like more and more stablecoins are launching for different use cases and different reasons. But do you think that there is room in the market for multiple US dollar-backed stablecoins, or do you think we'll see consolidation at some time in the future?
Listen, I think they need to have wide adoption, right? So that's really the test for, let's say, a centralized exchange in the US. I'll leave the names out. Or a big fintech with millions of users, it's okay, but they need to get that volume of usage. So that's what everyone's striving for. It's a non-trivial go-to-market effort. They also need to trade well. I mean, it's, Circle about a year ago during the financial turmoil around Silicon Valley Bank traded down to 93 cents. So, as an ETF sponsor, that's not something you want to see. So you really want to build something that's super bulletproof, and you need market makers and liquidity around it as well. So it takes an ecosystem. So I think there can be competition in the space. We're excited about it.
All right, Jan, we are going to wrap it up there. Thanks so much for joining the show today.
Thanks, Jan.